and I know how to use it. The rules of the game, as I think everyone knows, is the questions have to be submitted in advance and in writing. And so tonight we have five people who have asked for some time with the board. The first one's not a question, but a request to come forward and offer an expression of thanks. So Sandra Tien, are you here? Bonjour, Sandra.
Bonjour, Sandra. Dans les autres rencontres qu'on avait eues, j'avais posé beaucoup de questions. Donc, je voulais prendre un moment pour remercier Martine Alfonso ainsi que le conseil d'administration pour tous les suivis qui ont été faits suite aux questions qui avaient été posées ici. Donc, merci, c'est vraiment apprécié. Je parle au nom de l'équipe APTSUSM, mais également au nom des membres qu'on représente. Donc, merci.
Merci à vous, Sarah. Et aussi, appréciation pour le suivi de l'administration et avec l'appréciation du conseil d'administration, à Martine et l'équipe. Second question, Dr. Maureen Keeley from the RBH asking questions about Bondo Metro.
Yes, I will leave you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bassandre and members of the Board of Directors of the MUHC, my question this evening relates to the design of the second entrance to be built at the Bentham Metro and also to the proposed pharmacy for the MUHC Glen site. These two subjects, implausible as it may sound, are in fact interrelated, and so I respectfully ask your indulgence as I raise these issues with you. I am Maureen Keeley, and I'm questioning you this evening as a representative of the RBH Patients Committee and also as a member of the Consultation Interquartier, or SIC for short. The SIC is an organization of nine community groups from St. Henry, NDG, and Westmount who have worked together for more than 17 years to ensure the smooth integration of the MUHC complex of the Glen into our communities. To that end, in recent years, SIC has collaborated with RUTA and TCAM, Montreal-wide community organizations dedicated to transportation issues, especially those issues which relate to people who suffer from impaired mobility.
Dr. Keeley, I understand that this is a complex question, and I understand that you've very generously prepared a document for us. May I respectfully ask you to give us the question and make
it. You can't. You're going to have to go through. This is what I'm trying to tell you. I'm sorry, but it is. We are trying to raise the awareness of the board, and I don't really expect an answer tonight. Okay, but if you just bear with me for another minute or two, because this is.
And I appreciate that you've gone to this trouble. We have clearly a great deal of information here. And because of level, perhaps if we can better answer your question once we've gone through this.
Yeah, well, I'd just like you to listen, and I'd like to be on the public record, and with due respect, this is the only time the public get to ask the Board of Directors questions.
Still good enough.
Okay. It should be noted that both the RBH Patients Committee and the SIC submitted written briefs to the SCM at the 2017 public consultation regarding the proposed second edicule at Vendome, and members were in attendance at both of the SCM public meetings on this subject. The second handicapped accessible metro entrance at Vendome, as well as the installation of a pharmacy on the Glen site, have been long-time interests of the SIC and, since the opening of the Glen, also to the RBH Patients Committee. At the SCM's public information set meetings in the spring, we were informed, one, that first, five elevators will be installed, which according to the SCM's website, and I quote, the elevators can accommodate two manually operated wheelchairs with an attendant or a four-wheel mobility scooter with an attendant or a guide dog. Unfortunately, the STM website only addresses those who require wheelchair access. Members of both committees question whether there will be sufficient capacity in these elevators to also accommodate those with limited mobility. That is, persons having difficulty using stairs or people with canes, walkers, crutches, etc., as well as parents with strollers. Two, there are no escalators planned for the second entrance at Vendome Metro, because according to the STM, there is insufficient height to accommodate escalators. As several participants at the STM meetings noted, escalators permit able-bodied people to move through the station faster. Since it is anticipated that the number of riders will rapidly increase dramatically, large groups of patients milling around this edicule is a recipe for increased crime. Think of the Villa Maria and Snowden stations. The MUHC does not need this type of problem. We query whether there really is no way for the STM to include escalators, or is the cost factor the real issue? Three, the public passageways in the second edicule from the Maisonneuve to the train or subway appear to us to be relatively narrow. Keeping in mind that the STM is publicly projecting ridership will increase from 9 million currently to 18 million by 2021, we are questioning whether the width of these corridors will be sufficient, especially during peak hours. Four, the corridor on the MUHC side, where the second STM entrance meets with the hospital corridor, also appears to be quite narrow. Both the RVH Patients Committee and the SIC query whether this passageway will be able to cope with the numbers of people expected to use them during peak hours. Five, our community groups have noted that the tentative site for the MUHC pharmacy is proposed to be on S1 close to the east side of the RVH emergency. We have no quarrel with the location, but we are concerned whether there is enough space at this location for both the pharmacy and a sufficiently wide corridor leading from the second Vendome entrance into the hospital complex. I realize, Mr. Brassandi, that I am asking a complex question encapsulating details to which the MUHC board may or may not be able to respond tonight. The purpose of this query is to raise awareness with the board of the community's concerns. Our organizations await your feedback. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's a lot of information, including STM decisions, but Richard Faye, would you try and help us start the conversation?
First of all, I will not be speaking on behalf of the STM. The design is a responsibility of the STM. What can we commit to is that we will transfer that question and those concerns to the STM. I know they've been raised at the public hearings that took place in February and March. I have not seen the new design stemming from that. So we're going to transfer that information. As for the pharmacy, I want to inform you that, and you may know this, GISN did a survey of all the commercial spaces at the land, whether they met the requirements of staff and the patients as well, and the pharmacy is a definite go. What may be interesting is the location might change in order to facilitate greater access to patients, i.e. moving to the gallery. So this is a positive change. We're in discussions with GISN on this. And I know you're very concerned about the hours of opening. It's still in the plans. So I've extended. We've been working together for too long. We are asking for extended hours there. And will in the tender document. So
but this is precisely why we came to you this evening, simply to raise the awareness of the board
to these issues, because this is where we're, these are the things we're concerned about, and we're not getting the answers from the STM. I realize you're not the ones building the Medicaid, but at the same time, it's going to impinge on your patient population.
So these are important issues, because our patients' access to the area where they get their care is part of the patient experience and part of the services that we offer. And you have heard from Madame Etienne, and I thank Madame Etienne for her intervention, that you should follow up on the questions that are raised at the board, and we will do the same with the one that you've raised today.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing it up. If you haven't pointed it, just bring a little more detail than we normally are.
Well, but it was a complex issue.
That's fine. Okay, the point, and you heard the management respond, we will follow up. Okay. Thank you again. Melissa, back to you.
Okay, we'll keep moving forward. Can I invite Dominic Nelson to Mike?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board. What is the MUHC doing to ensure the RBH and its various health buildings are protected? I received various reports recently about vagrants and squatters appearing more and more on and in the properties. And I think it's only a matter of time before these heritage buildings are damaged by fire or anything else.
So thank you for your question. It's obviously a concern of the MUHC. We have legacy buildings that are still under our responsibility, and around the former War Victoria Hospital, there is the Montreal Neuro and the Allen Memorial that still offer services to our patients. So the perimeters have been secure. They're security guards 24 hours a day. And only the entrances that need to remain open are, everything else has been blocked. So it's something that we are following up very closely. If you have heard of particular issues, I invite you to raise them to the security of the MUHC. But again, it's something that we're tracking very closely. So we things are in place to offer proper security for the premises. Next person who registered was Pierre Porto. Pierre,
vous aussi. Moi, souvent, quand je me pose une question sur le système de santé, puis je ne trouve pas de réponse, j'ai souvent le réflexe d'aller dans la loi. Je ne sais pas, c'est pas un livre de chevet, là, mais ce matin, je suis allé dans la loi. Puis j'ai lu ceci à l'article 171. Et ce soir, je m'adresse vraiment au conseil d'administration. Je ne m'adresse pas au directorat. Je m'adresse au conseil d'administration. Le CA. Le conseil d'administration d'un établissement définit les orientations stratégiques en conformité avec les orientations nationales et régionales. Il établit également les priorités et voit leur respect. Ces orientations portent sur le besoin de santé, tant physique que psychique, et les besoins sociaux à satisfaire sur les clientèles à desservir et sur les services à offrir. Donc, votre rôle, là, je suis, j'étais parmi vous pendant 4 ans, c'est pas juste de regarder des colonnes de chiffres. Vous avez l'obligation légale, en vertu de l'article 171, de voir au-delà de ça. Et l'article 172, le conseil d'administration doit, en outre, quatrièmement, s'assurer de la pertinence, de la qualité, de la sécurité et de l'efficacité des services dispensés. Cinquièmement, s'assurer du respect des droits des usagers. Alors, dans le contexte budgétaire, puis là, je m'adresse à vous, comme c'est là. Très difficile du CUSUM. Et dans cette phase de transition vers un nouveau directorat, on entend beaucoup de propos. Puis là, je ne parle pas des journaux, je ne parle pas de la Gazette. Je parle du monde que je rencontre au CUSUM à toutes sortes de niveaux. Des travailleurs, des médecins, des administrateurs, puis lorsqu'on entend des propos faisant porter tantôt la responsabilité de cette situation par l'administration, puis de la faute des administrateurs. Vous pouvez entendre des voix certaines. Tantôt par le M3S, alors c'est de la faute du ministère. Tantôt par les médecins. Nous, les représentants élus des patients, on ne va pas rentrer dans ce scénario-là, essayer de trouver un drame comme on a vu dans la Gazette Faustien, où on peut parler de peut-être d'un drame kafkaïen, qu'on va se métamorphoser en bébite. J'espère que non. Alors, nous voulons, nous, là, ce qu'on veut, là, c'est les meilleurs soins pour la vie. Best care for life. Les meilleurs soins pour la vie, dispensés humainement, hein, humainement, respectueux de nos droits. Nous devons attendre que l'excellence, nous devons admettre que l'excellence est compromise sérieusement lorsque des programmes entiers et des services bénéfiques pour les patients sont carrément supprimés ou modifiés substantiellement, faute d'argent. Je donne quelques exemples. Ce sont des exemples. Je ne rentre pas dans les colonnes de chiffres, les lits, le nombre de lits, d'infirmières, de ci, de ça. On les connaît. Mais il y a d'autres qui nous touchent, nous, dans nos vies. Suppression des secrétaires médicales. Hein? Moi, je suis un patient du cancer. Mon médecin, là, au Royal Vic, je pouvais aller au 9e étage, Nine West. Je savais où était son bureau. Je connais la porte, il n'était pas là. Pendant le secrétaire, aujourd'hui, j'ai dit au Joe, je ne sais même pas ce qui est ton bureau. Puis ça ne me donne absolument rien d'essayer de t'appeler, je ne sais même pas comment. L'atelier d'autogestion des soins chroniques. Bye bye. L'éducation des patients. Pas mal sabré. Bye bye. Le programme de survivance des patients du cancer. Bye bye. Ça, là, vous savez, quand on parle de bonne pratique, c'est pas juste de aseptiser quand je donne une piqûre, puis de ci, puis ça, puis d'avoir une qualité clinique exceptionnelle. Les patients, là, ils ont besoin de plus que ça dans leur quotidien. Puis, nous, on en rencontre, on en voit des gens qui sont en détresse, puis qui souffrent à cause de toutes sortes de problèmes comme ça. Alors, ma question, ça s'adresse au CA. Ça ne s'adresse pas à Martine.
Elle est membre
du CA. Oui, mais... vous êtes le président, M. Boussandri. Quand et comment le CA prendra-t-il au sérieux son obligation légale de se faire le gardien de l'excellence et de la qualité des soins et agira-t-il en conséquence? Voilà. Parce que, je veux juste ajouter, parce que depuis tout le brouhaha, là, on ne vous a pas entendu. Vous êtes silencieux. Alors, on aimerait, nous, les patients, vous êtes nos administrateurs, que vous nous dites, que vous nous rassuriez. Parce qu'on n'a pas d'assurance de l'administration qui est pris d'un bord, ni du ministère. Alors, on est pris d'un bord et de l'autre. Alors, il nous reste vous.
I would let my colleagues from the board ask answer for the governance point of view. You've mentioned three programs that you've said are sont bye-bye. Je ne sais pas pourquoi je vous réponds en anglais, étant donné que nous sommes francophones les deux. Alors, je vais vous répondre en français. L'éducation des patients, l'atelier d'autogestion de la douleur chronique et le programme de survivance du cancer, ce sont des programmes qui sont importants. Le programme de survivance du cancer, c'est vrai qu'on a demandé à l'infirmière qui est dédiée d'aller en appui à ses autres collègues, mais c'est un programme qui est toujours très actif. Pour ce qui est de l'éducation des patients, c'est vrai qu'il y a une source de financement qui contribuait à notre déficit et on a regardé dans l'exercice qu'on vient de faire tous les tiroirs et partout le financement n'était pas couvert par une source de revenus. Il a fallu qu'on regarde le modèle. Et ce qu'on a fait, c'est qu'on a rencontré dernièrement les leaders en disant que dans 4 mois, il faudra qu'on trouve un nouveau modèle pour soutenir le programme. Alors, ce n'est pas que le patient education va fermer, bien au contraire, on va s'assurer que leur modèle de financement, leur modèle d'affaires puisse continuer très longtemps. En ce moment, ce sont des fonds qui les soutiennent depuis des années et ce ne sera plus le cas. Alors, ce sont des programmes qui sont très importants et qu'on veut continuer. Et c'est vrai que c'est un défi dans la transformation de garder la même façon de faire. Alors, l'anxiété des gens qui s'occupent de ces programmes-là est réelle, mais on les accompagne pour trouver des solutions parce que ce sont des programmes qui sont très importants. Je vais faire un dernier détail, un dernier commentaire avant de laisser aux membres du conseil le soin de répondre. Pour ce qui est des secrétaires médicales, c'est vrai que c'est un modèle qu'on est en train de changer. C'est une transformation qui est difficile. Ça fait partie des exercices qu'on a fait où on se comparait une visite. Quand un patient vient au CUSM, une visite quand le patient va dans un autre établissement comparable qui offre des services très similaires et nos services coûtaient plus cher. Et c'est pour ça qu'il fallait qu'on regarde un autre modèle. C'est très difficile de passer d'une façon de faire qui est traditionnelle à une autre et nos employés et les membres des équipes cliniques doivent réorganiser leurs choses. Et vous avez raison, M. Lurteau, les patients doivent y trouver leur compte. Avant, après et pendant la transition. Et ils doivent pouvoir contacter leur clinicien. Et ça, c'est un enjeu auquel on regarde de près. Parce que c'est encore comme l'accès aux locaux, c'est important. Alors, c'est vrai que dans cette transformation-là, il a fallu qu'on regarde des choses qui ont des liens directs avec les patients. Mais on est obligé de le faire avec la situation. Mais je suis d'accord avec vous, surtout, ce sont des services qui doivent continuer à être faire, il faut qu'on trouve un modèle où ils peuvent continuer à l'être dans les autres ressources qu'on va utiliser. C'est la réponse de l'administration.
Well, if you knew, I mean, that was a long answer. You had to take the essence of the question.
Well, I think Mr. Arturo did an incredible amount of context setting as to the role and responsibilities of the board, both within the law and I would suggest morally. He was asking within the context of trying to achieve a balanced budget and optimization. These are all very well and good from a financial perspective. But the question is where and how is the board supporting, as Maxim just described, the delivery of the highest quality of care and delivered in the most humane way to all of our patients while also managing our financial obligations.
I think that's a good path for you. I think Fatin answered a good part of it. The board by itself is a group of volunteers that meet to provide governance to the administration of the institution. It doesn't run the institution on a day-by-day basis. That's done by Martine and her team. What we do is make sure that the structures that are put in place provide the best quality care for patients. And you heard Melissa herself talk about one of the committees, which is the COCAR committee, that gets representation from all of the quality effort, patient monitoring, patient outcomes throughout the various hospitals that we have. So that's just one example. So the way that we look, it's not easy. We have a budget that the ministry has given us. We don't think it's sufficient. You heard Martin talk about the fact that the administration is capable of a balanced budget, but there are consequences to it, which she clearly outlined before, so I won't repeat it. So the best that we can do is to make sure that patient safety and patient care is not compromised while the reality of the budget has to be respected. Now I invite other members of the board who are on other committees to add support to that. Marie, you have any other comment?
Well, just maybe to say, as both of you have pointed out, that you know the law recognizes that the obligations of the board are within the parameters of the budget that is imposed on us. And so we do have to take that into consideration.
Okay. Eric, you raised a number of good points, and I found myself nodding my head and agreeing with some of you, many of your points. It's not easy, especially under a very difficult time where we've been given budget compression. We're not alone, by the way. This has been done across the province. So the best that we can do is make sure that the management, my team, her team, physicians, the nurses, all the nearly 15,000 people associated with DMUEC live up to the standard of providing the best care. And I'm convinced that they are doing their best and that we are providing good care. It may not be ideal in terms of the funding that we should have, but it's like right now. And we have to get through next year on a balanced budget basis. So Pierre, that's the answer for now. So what's that back to you?
Okay, we have one more person who's asked to have access to the mic. Emily Carrera, are you here? Welcome.
Respectfully, do you have any results regarding the doctor drafting a consultation?
The question was, do we have any results of the consultation process that was run by Dr. Joshi across all of the West Bank institutions?
Dr. Joshi came with his report at the end of April to the minister. The minister had said when he announced Dr. Joshi's appointment that he would make the report public. We haven't seen it yet. So no, we don't know what to report. We can't comment on something we haven't seen yet. We did provide input to Dr. Joshi, who was specifically Dr. Sonberg led a consultation process across the NUAC, and we tabled our input to the Joshi report, which was made public. So that's the answer. Okay, thank you. Melissa? Okay. So with that, I would like to suggest that we terminate the meeting because we've gone through all the questions that were submitted. And thank you, members of the public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. I submitted three questions to the board today, and it was my understanding that the additional questions
that I have... Speak a little louder, please.
Sorry about that. I submitted three questions for the board today, and I understood that the last the additional questions that I had were to be asked after everybody had their turn. It's my understanding that that was the process.
If we had time. It's almost 7:40. Can we follow up directly with you on each of these? When you did submit them in advance, I appreciate that. We try and give everyone a chance, but we can follow up directly?
That's fair enough.
Okay, thank you. Apologies.
Thank you, Melissa. And thank you, members of the board and members of the public for attending the meeting and not having the meeting. Okay.